love Marvel.
Comic Conversations.
It's awesome.
With your host,
the wickedly talented
Tony.
Triple H is going to finish what DX started. Tell him, Try.
And Alex.
Lauren was supposed to do a paper on why government matters. This is what she wrote.
It doesn't. Well said.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Tony, and you're listening to a brand new episode of Comic Conversation, the podcast that reviews more comics than anybody else. Episode 183, where we talk all things comics for the week of March 1st, 2017. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Alex. Alex, how are you doing today?
Try. I wonder how long you tried to get that over for.
That's why I'm like, oh, I'll give it to him for his drop. And I'm like, he's not taking the bait. It's not getting over with him, so I'll just make it my drop. And that's why I gave you the Ron Swanson.
I love Ron Swanson.
Have you explained
if all
to the
my
folks...
drops could be Ron Swanson
from now on?
Yeah, it'd be great.
Have you explained to the folks your giant love for Ron Swanson yet?
Oh, because I only just started watching that show with my wife, and I found out why this Ron Swanson fellow is a sort of cartoonish libertarian. But I love him for being, because you know the only other libertarian on TV was Bill Maher, and he's actually not a libertarian at all.
Mm-hmm.
So having one who's somewhat real was very exciting to me, and he instantly became my favorite character.
Okay. All right, that's gonna do it for our opening segment. Let's move on to this week's news.
An American man, similar to Bobby Knight, just a little bit nicer. He's investing in gold because he doesn't like the Federal Reserve or the government, kinda. King of Pawnee, so we bow down to his swivel chair. He's the man, the myth, the municipal gift. Better read up on the literature. You can't faze him, Ron fucking Swanson. You can't stop him, Ron fucking Swanson. Indiana's favorite.
Alex, you're either going to hate that song or love it.
I have to play that for my wife.
That is Adam Warrock's Waka Flocka Swanson from the Parks and Rec EP.
That's amazing.
I was like, there's no middle ground. He's either going to think this is stupid or he's going to think it's a great song.
Well, it is stupid, but it's still good.
All right, speaking of things that are stupid, let's go into our first news story. Old Man Logan is getting a new creator, a new writer, in Ed Bryson.
I don't know who that is.
Neither do I. This is a new comic book writer that I haven't heard of. So that would mean Jeff Lemire is leaving the book, and what they're teasing right out the gate for his first storyline would be him going back to the future, and he's immediately finding Maestro.
All right, that's cool.
Yeah, and with that, we noticed, I noticed anyway, from looking at all the May solicitations, that Jeff Lemire is not attached to any current Marvel title. So the rumor going around is that Jeff Lemire will not be renewing his Marvel contract going forward.
Now, there's something funny to that, because we read Royal City this week. Was that what it's called?
Yes.
Okay. I read the backup. And he said he expressed his desire to get back to more grounded stories like what he started out with. And then said, but, you know, he said something effective, unless I have a nervous breakdown, I'll still be writing the superhero stuff at Marvel. And then the same day I read this, you told me, oh, it looks like Jeff Lemire's leaving Marvel. I'm like, well, I guess he had a nervous breakdown.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
I mean, I think he'll do just fine. He's got plenty of... That's the one thing I always said. I like Jeff Lemire. I like the stuff that he's doing in Valiant. I like the stuff that he's doing in Image.
He sold Descender, I think, to
What's
someone.
That?
He sold Descender, like it got optioned or something. So he's got money.
And I'm like, if anything, his Marvel titles are coming off kind of weak. But I'm like, whatever. I'm sure that comes with the territory. I'm sure you have editorials pretty heavy-handed when it comes to that book. But... If this is true, and he is leaving Marvel, that is kind of a shame, but I have to imagine they will do just fine without him.
Yeah, although Marvel, they're not exactly overflowing with talent right now.
I know, in fact, the article I linked to you about, where they were teasing that maybe Jeff Lemire was leaving Marvel permanently, Just joining the cast of folks that have left Marvel and haven't looked back.
Well, I mean, you can't say he won't look back, because they all come back eventually.
Yeah, let's see. In fact, that's another story we were talking about earlier, as long as we're talking Old Man Logan, that they're thinking about, and this was strictly a rumor, and I don't know how much legitimacy there is behind that article, though they're thinking about Wolverine, but they're only going to bring him back if they can have a big name attached to the title.
Yeah, but that's mystery.
Yeah, exactly. So it's one of the things, there's a bit of a... The books are still good, and obviously you're getting new names up in Marvel, but at the same time you're also seeing this brain drain as a source as far as Marvel Creative is concerned. All right, as long as we're talking one writer leaving to a creator-owned brand to another, Shelley Bond of DC Vertical Fame is leaving to join IDW's new creator-owned called Black Crown.
Who is this?
Shelley Bond.
Who?
Shelley Bond.
Yeah, who?
Well, the article I linked mentioned how she was instrumental in the Gerard Way Young Animal imprint. She was the editor on most of those books. It's not so much really her that's the big story here. It's that someone from DC Vertical is going to IDW to start their own creator-owned.
Yeah, and that is kind of a big deal. I mean, the only thing is, it's like, we don't know the details behind what Image gives its guys working on books there. We don't know what their cut is. We don't know how much they put into advertising or how they determine that. We don't know what IDW is going to do with it. But presumably it'll be competitive. Which could be good, because it'd be more guys doing creator-owned books, and creator-owned books is how the writers make all their money now.
It's following a trend, because I think last week we had a story about one of the founders of Vertigo going to Dark Horse to start a creator-owned imprint. So it's one of these things where there seems to be a trend. Maybe this is something we just know from the back end. There seems to be a lot of money in that, or it seems to be... Maybe the big two are offering less and less money, and the big names are wanting to go do their own thing. And maybe they want some leverage as far as negotiating with Image, and the idea of being able to do this with these other brands would actually be pretty nice. There was no names attached to the current brand right now, but as we've seen so far, this seems to be the trend now. And
somewhat, yeah.
So... Very interesting story. I'm curious to see where this leads. I'm more curious to see what titles we wind up getting as a result of this.
That's the thing. And even more, I'm more interested to see what writers sign up for it. Because, you know, if it's someone I like, I'll read it, regardless of what it's about.
Well, that's the old thing you're always going to get with these creator-owned imprints is, okay, you might get a couple of names that you may have never heard of, and there may be a couple of good titles here, but really... The strength of it seems to be the big name gimmick.
Yeah, and you know, but yeah, the new people doing it is nice, because you might make a, you know, they write a book and a lot of people don't buy it, but it's really good, and then they get word of mouth, and then they go to Marvel or DC and have a good run on a book, and then they leave and they go to Image or IDW and sell something for a TV show or a movie and make a bunch of money.
There you go.
That's comics now.
I don't know if that's comforting to know that's the business model now. Is you gain a bit of a following, and then you go to one of the big two, and then you get an even bigger following, and then you go back to the smaller imprints.
Well, I mean, you could argue Image really isn't that much smaller. Like, maybe in volume, but they do have books that sell incredibly well, and they have books that outsell a good portion of Marvel and DC books. It's, you know, so they're fine. And I don't know if IDW can rise to that level. There are so many new comics released every month. It's hard to break out of the pack.
Remember what a gimmick used to be? We'd always read an Image number one, but
we stopped
with Marvel and DC becoming increasingly more competitive. and the sheer volume of Image number ones coming out, we just stopped it because we couldn't keep up.
Yeah, it's actually become a struggle on the show to decide what we're actually going to read because there's just so much new shit. And then you're always worried like, oh, fuck, if it's good, I'm going to have to keep reading this.
Or, yeah. Or better yet, if we choose to pass it up, is it going to be something that we're passing up going to be wind up being this really big title that everybody winds up reading and loving?
Yep.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's news. Let's move on to this week's books. I'm sorry.
What a thrill with darkness and silence through the night. What a thrill. I'm searching and I'll melt into you. What a fear in my heart, but you're so supreme.
Yeah! There's Metal Gear Solid 3, the intro song.
We've played this before.
Not as a news theme, though.
Oh, okay.
You know why we played it before, right?
Because we were making fun of it, I imagine.
Yes, because of stuff like this.
Someday you go through the rain. Yeah. And someday you'll feed. On a tree frog.
Did that must have sounded. I wonder if this was actually written in Japanese and translated, or if they wrote the lyrics in English, because that's so awkward.
I think what they were trying to do is, maybe it was originally written in Japanese, but they want to get over the Bond gimmick, but at the same time, they still want to push the elements of the game. And was one of the elements of the game is you're supposed to kill the local animal life to sustain yourself.
There is a Japanese version of the song. So I assume in Japanese that just sounds better.
Uh-huh. Well, it's also the Japanese. You're always going to get them being wacky. So even if it doesn't sound good, you're always going to get that.
Yeah, I guess. It's a good thing Dave's not on the show. He'd be mad.
He'd be creaming his jeans.
He'd be like, oh, Japanese pop retro music. Gah!
Ichiban!
Ichiban!
Number one!
We've been making fun of former Comic Conversations co-host Dave and calling him a dirty weebo. Because he loves Japan long time.
It's one of these things you would casually call him that sometimes, and then I just got carried away with it.
Yeah, you've been saying it constantly, like even when it's not relevant. Like tonight I called him a weebo for fucking watching Raw. It didn't make any sense, but yeah.
Alright, let's go on this week's books, which include Moon Knight 12, Clone Conspiracy, Omega 1, Unstoppable Wasp 3, America 1, Hawkeye 3, Avengers 5, Champions 6, Walking Dead 165, Royal City 1, Rat Queens 1, Shade and Changing Girls 6, Midnighter Apollo 3, Fallen Rise of Captain Adam 3, Batman 18, Justice League 16, Aquaman 18, and I'll open up this week's book from Avatar Press via Cinema Purgatorio issue 8.
Okay, so you know how Cinema Purgatorio, the actual Cinema Purgatorio part, sometimes references real things? But since it's real things from the 1930s, I never know it. Mm-hmm. This time I actually know what the fuck they were talking about.
Ooh, okay, then by all means, share with
us. Okay, because they even used the real character names. Patrick Sullivan created Felix the Cat.
Ah, okay.
And Otto... What the fuck was his last name? Munson? No, that was the guy from Kingpin. Otto something. He was his lead animator. And the rumor was he actually did all the work. And he did all the creating and everything.
Thank God you never see that in comics.
Sullivan, so he ran this cartoon studio, produced cartoons. Then he got arrested for raping a 14-year-old girl.
Oops.
Which they mentioned in this. And by the way, he went to jail for 9 months for that.
Ooh, come on.
This is in the 30s.
No bueno.
Mm-mm. No, but this story was about
Ox the cat and Pat the dog.
It was him presented as a cartoon character. Also, the person going into the cinema is a woman. I don't know if it's always been a woman.
That's the one I always wonder. Obviously, it's the one thing that, as the reader, you're always going to think it's the sex of the character that you're reading as. So naturally, you assume we both assumed it was a guy.
Yeah, but it's not. It's a woman.
Yeah.
But anyway, in the story, it was done in the old timey cartoon style. Mm-hmm. And he was just basically talking to Otto about how shit everything was, and then in the end, his creator ended up like it was a photo of an actual hand drawing a big black abyss and dumping him back into the inkwell and killing him, and then the narrator, the person watching the movie, thought that the creepy Hitler-looking usher or theater owner wanted to bring her up to the projection room and give her a bit of the old in-out, in-out. But he didn't, and he was disgusted when she started to remove her blouse. And then she had to leave the theater, and all the people who worked there knew what she did and were looking at her evilly. So it was a dark story, but it wasn't as dark as they usually are because the character sort of profiled was a bad person.
Here's the thing. They kept mentioning that this was intermission, but the way she runs off, is this the end of the Alan Moore stuff? Because obviously Cinema Purgatorio is written by Alan Moore and the artwork is by Kevin O'Neill.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we'll find out next month.
Because remember, I think it was months ago we had that story that Alan Moore was retiring. And this is when he still had a couple of Avatar books still being printed.
This might all be in the can, though. Like, he might have written, because I don't imagine these take long. He might have written, like, 20 fucking stories. Because this book was Kickstarter funded. So he might have written, like, 20 fucking stories and just artists had to draw them. And that's it. Like, I don't know, though. But, we'll find out. Next story was
Code Pru by Garth Ennis and art by Ralu Caceres.
I thought this one was kind of funny.
It was good, but when we were talking about Cinema Purgatorio, there was a story I liked a lot more.
There was a better story, but this one was the comedy. And so they went to a place because a guy had a heart attack. He had a heart attack while jerking off at his computer. And she's like, well, what are we doing here? And he's like, oh, well, we got to deal with the ghost. And the guy was a ghost. And she's like, well, he doesn't really look that
harmful. You forgot the part how they found him as a ghost.
Oh, they have eye drops, special eye drops that let them see ghosts. So they found him in the bathtub with no pants on. So the guy really liked porn, and she's like, well, you know, why are ghosts bad? And he's like, well, you know, they can kind of get in the people's heads, and like little kids can see them. So when somebody moves in, he's like, you know, and then they'll get in your dreams and they'll make you think things. He's like, it's just a bad scene. He's like, so the only way to deal with a ghost is you got to hook them up with another ghost. And she's like, well, I don't really think even a ghost is going to want to hang out with this loser. And he's like, oh, don't worry. He's like, there was a fire in the building next door. Big fire, like 17 people died. Well, and none of them got out? Well, no, they were a little busy. And they look out the window and it was like a bunch of people having like an orgy. Mm-hmm. And she's like, well, why didn't they leave? And he goes, well, I guess they're having too much fun. So what they did was they took the porn addict ghost and they put him in the window so that he could look at the nonstop ghost orgy. And they showed that a new family had moved in.
Like, it's a family and they have a kid already, but the wife is pregnant with another kid on the way. And then on the corner of your eye, you see the old fat ghost looking at the folks having the orgy.
Yeah. Just jerking off. And that's apparently all he does now. But they took care of the problem because he won't bother the people. Because he got what he wanted. So that was a fun little story. And then we had the Civil War story.
Yes, A More Perfect Union, as it's called, by Max Brooks and Gabriel Andretti.
They lost.
Very much so.
They did not lose the war, but the gigantic ants had sort of overrun them and killed most of them. Very, very graphic. You know, people getting ripped in half and stuff. And they said they were going to flee to Gettysburg. And there was no, like, he usually does, like, a little write-up at the end, like, giving you some actual Civil War facts. There were none this time, and no. I think that's because the entire issue was a fight with giant bug monsters. So you can't really relate that to the actual Civil War this time. And then
That too also read like an ending.
No, because it had a tease of we're gonna go to Gettysburg now.
Oh, okay. So far the troops that they've been focusing on, with a couple exceptions, they'd all been wiped out in this battle.
Well, the commanding officer and the general that no one liked, the foreign general, they were still alive. So. Yeah,
and they mentioned that the war seems to be going a little bit better, even though this particular battle went south real quick.
So, yeah, that one ended. And then we had Modded.
Oh, I know I can't give my favorite book to a
short
a in part Cinema of an Purgataria. Anthology, but Modded by Karen Gillian, art by Noel Lopez. I love this.
This was very good. And... this book I had complained about earlier just because, I mean, it was silly. That's not what I was complaining about. What I was complaining about was Cinema Purgatorio is in black and white. Mm-hmm. And like Cinema Purgatorio works very well because the artist he's able to draw in like a simple style. The artist who does Modded does this like hyper detailed thing. And it sometimes without colors made it hard to see, but in this issue, I'm not sure why, but I didn't have a problem seeing any of it. His line work was a little cleaner, and I think the inks might have been slightly heavier, so it just everything was more defined.
My favorite is when they introduced the Psycho Gorilla Thrilla. They mentioned
Thrilla Gorilla.
One of the people that were looking on was like, "Oh, I love the hair rendering. Nice."
Yeah, well, because they're nerds, and it's all about you know modding. But our main character, the young looking girl, she had when they were in the abyss, like the pit, she had given someone else's discarded monster a new arm, which made it loyal to her. So instead of summoning, she had a one-on-one battle with one of the other guys. Who worked for, he's in the group with the guy who stole Fluff Bumble, which is what this entire story is about, her getting Fluff Bumble back. So instead of summoning her shitty little monster, she summoned this big fuck off thing that beat the shit out of Thrilla Gorilla and then teabagged him.
That was my favorite part.
Which the other guy apologized for. And then I think his name is Tommy Zero, Tommy End or something, the bad guy. He's like, "Oh, we got to figure out what's going on with this one." So they invited her out drinking and she's trying to fit in. So she's like, "Yeah, fucking A, let's go." And she doesn't cuss or anything.
Yeah, you know what? The show's over. You don't have to put up your front anymore. We're friends now.
Yeah. He's like, "It's okay."
It's Tommy Zero.
But really he just wants to see what's going on with her because she keeps unexpectedly winning and he wants to figure out why. And then the last story was The Vast
by Kristone Gage and art by Gabriel Andrade as well.
I still think this is the strongest story in all these. So in the last issue, the lady pilot, found one of the little monsters and it had like bonded with her. And it killed all the Russian soldiers who were coming to steal their monsters. And, the guy who had, you know, all the big fuck off scary monsters that were working with them. He explained to her that the United States has a group called the Nurturers who, they try to bond with these creatures when they're babies. And then they will be loyal to them. They said it's still dangerous. They showed an example of one of them biting a fucking guy's hand off. But, you know, if they bond to them, they'll listen to them. He said they're not really like, because she compared them to dogs. He's like, well, they're not exactly like dogs, but they can kind of be trained like that. And then he showed the differences between them and the Russians. The humans, or the Americans, they have the, they do the whole bonding thing where the little monsters think that they're their, like, mommy and daddy, whereas the Russians torture the shit out of the little fuckers and make them scared so that they'll listen to them. And they said the Russians are not as effective at it as we are because they don't bond with the creatures. So it's kind of like
my favorite part
Pokemon,
they mentioned, it's like, oh, they're more of a stick and carrot approach. And they mentioned how horrific it is, and it's like,
well,
yeah.
They said they're more stick than carrot. And they just showed them, like, electrocuting one of them.
And they're like, they were appalled, but they're like, yeah, you know what? If we'd done the same thing, we wouldn't have thought it was such a bad deal. But the fact that they beat us to it.
Well, he also said he's like, they might have done it if they could. He's like, but, you know, we wouldn't let them. And she's like, oh, you mean the United States? And he's like, no, the Nurturers. Like, we wouldn't let them. Because they care about their little fucking monsters. No. So they don't want them to be treated badly. So, and they basically told her, like, yeah, you're probably going to end up being one of the Nurturers now. They'll definitely take you. And she's like, no, I'm a pilot and I have a fiance and I want to start a family. And he's like, yeah, I didn't say you're going to have a choice. When you show up with that little fucking monster, they're pretty much going to tell you this is what you're doing. And then that issue ended. So, yeah, that was Cinnamon Purgatorio. Some good stories in there.
I'm looking at the end of the issue here, and they have sort of, you know, there's the giant wreckage scene at the end, but there's sort of like a naked advertisement for the U.S. Air Force.
Was there?
Yeah, it kind of takes you out of it. I mean, obviously they show the plane there, but the way the sign almost seems untouched, it's like, oh, okay, you probably got some money for that.
Yeah, I don't know.
And as I mentioned, I'm flipping through. At the very end, they mentioned that Cinema Purgatorio will return and a more perfect union will return.
Oh, okay.
So it's back to form. Nothing's... Even though I said the first two stories read like a conclusion, it's going to continue, so...
Okay.
All right, that's going to do it from Avatar Press. Let's move on to DC Comics with Aquaman, issue 18, writer Dan Abnett, art by Scott Eaton.
So Aquaman was fighting the thing called Warhead in the last issue, and we wanted to find out what he was, and it turned out he was a Chinese citizen who was turned into a weapon who had, you know, he had super strength and stuff, but he also had like telepathic powers where he could take people over, and he was rented out to, I don't know, some other country. And he got damaged. And when he gets damaged, he's supposed to go somewhere and repair himself somewhere safe. But the real issue was he's working for these bad people and they like completed the mission, but then they're like, okay, now kill everyone. And the way he said it was, he didn't understand the strategic value in killing all the civilians, but the implication was, he's not fucking evil, so he didn't want to kill all the civilians. So Aquaman said, all right, well, they don't have the technology to fix you here, so we'll bring you to Atlantis, because Aquaman he basically talked him down.
He said, you have PTSD, this is why you're acting the way you are.
Yeah, I thought that was a little cheesy.
Yeah.
Like, story-wise, it made sense.
But it seems
they didn't say the guy was a soldier. He was, like, a normal guy, and they threw him into this horrible situation.
It seems so heavy-handed.
Yeah, and also, like, is Aquaman, like, a shrink?
No. Not by any stretch of the imagination. But the thing they emphasized was, he initially wanted to go pair up with Aquaman because he's like, oh, well, you have a fantastic military. Let me go with you. You can fix all the world's problems. And Aquaman's like, I can help you out here with this idea that you're going to use my military to take over the world when I just spent the last couple of days trying to put out a giant fire of people thinking Atlantis hates America.
Well, he also had the thing where because Aquaman's got the limited telepathy, and he kind of increased it so he could see what everyone thought about him. And he was a little disappointed because he knew before, everyone thought he was a joke. You know, oh, it's Aquaman. He's going to go talk to some fish. Oh, fuck a dolphin. Nobody took him seriously, but now he found out everybody's just afraid of him.
My favorite was, I used to think Aquaman was a joke, right? But now my kids want to be like Aquaman, and I don't know how to feel about that.
Yeah, because he's kind of fucking scary. Yeah, so, he's apparently taking this guy with him, and the government is actually kind of funny, because he's like, yeah, so, because, the government people are there. And he's like, yeah, so I'm going to take him to Atlantis, and we're going to fix him up and help him out. And the guy's like, I don't even want to get into the many list of problems with what you just said. And Aquaman's like, okay, then don't. And he just takes him. And the Aquamarines or whatever they were called, the people who could turn into sea, they're Marines, but they can turn into, shark people and shit.
Mm-hmm.
One of them came talk to Aquaman, just be like, hey, brother, that was just, we were at war, and, I was just following orders, right? And he's like, I don't want to fucking talk to this shark bitch who looks like Captain Marvel.
Well, that's what Mara pointed out. She's like, I don't want anything to do with it. And Aquaman's kind of cool. He's like, let's just hear her out, see what she has to say. And that was pretty much this week's Aquaman.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good book. I like it.
Yeah, no, it was good. This book has a good habit of its storylines do not overstay their welcome.
See, that's my one nitpick of this. I felt like there was more meat to this bone. Maybe you could have got another one or two issues out of it.
I was okay with it, though, because they had to introduce a new character, and you don't want to overdo it. He's probably, the way Abnett writes, I imagine he's got some big storyline planned, and he's setting up characters for it now. That's why he brought back the Aquamarines, and that's why he has this guy. It's probably all going to come into play eventually in a bigger storyline.
Yeah, they were just quick to square away the fact that he killed so many people, but, he had a reason, but at the same time, it's like, okay, you have this guy who's a giant threat, and you're just going to deal with it all in one issue.
Had post-traumatic stress disorder, dude. It's very dangerous.
And that excuses all the murder.
Did I ever tell you what my dad said about that?
No.
Because my dad was kind of a dick. And,
you don't say, your dad?
Well, he did three tours in Vietnam.
Oh, wow.
And when they talk about, the people who went kind of crazy, PTSD before they called it PTSD, he's like, those are the fuckers who are doing acid and smoking marijuana. the fact that war could affect people did not come into my dad's mind. It was drugs.
I like that from the sound of that, the apple didn't fall too far from the tree.
Well, I like to think I didn't inherit my dad's worst qualities. the racism. He was old, though.
What's that?
He was old, though. Lots of old people are racist.
That's true. That's no excuse, but,
a lot of people. Well, no, it just... It just means they haven't learned anything.
Justice League, issue 16, writer Brian Hitch, art by Fernando Passerin.
Okay, so they had to go through the incredibly awkward thing of the people who were around for the previous Hitch Justice League, the Rao storyline. Mm-hmm. That was the last Superman who is now dead. So they had to go to the trouble of introducing the new Superman to them because they said, okay, we're doing this thing, stopping the guys who are fucking up time. But the crystals told us we need Superman. And Batman is the only one who thinks to say, the fuck are you listening to these crystals for? Like, that's not good. But he brought Superman, and all Superman cares about is Jonathan and Lois disappeared. Like, they don't exist anymore. And all he cares about is getting his family back. So they're trying to explain all this big shit, and he's like, yeah, so where's my family? And they're like, we don't really know, but they're fucking around with the time stream, and it shouldn't really affect you guys because you're not from this timeline, but we don't know how them messing with the time stream could have affected, like, you being here. And they basically said, we don't know.
He's like, you're going to have to trust us on this. Help us out, and we hope it'll bring back your family. And Superman was kind of skeptical because he's like, I just want to bring back my family.
Well, yeah, but what else is he going to do? Uh-oh. There's a tornado warning in my area.
Uh-oh.
And they want me to take shelter. So if I disappear, it's because I lost power. I live in the city. I'm not worried about tornado. So they cut back and forth between all the Justice League people because they're all kind of like Aquaman's way back in the past, and they gave them bombs that they are to put in the central chamber of these time machine things and then blow them all up at once, which will fix things, I guess. And
because comics.
Superman ended up like on their, I guess, on their base, and they got a big army there, but he's Superman, so he's just like, yeah, I just want to talk. Like, you guys can fight me, but it's not going to go well for you. Superman's a fucking beast, and he doesn't give a shit if there's an army.
Yeah, because this ain't new 52 Superman. This is no. OG Superman.
Yeah, OG Superman don't give a fuck.
Especially when you're messing with his family? Uh-uh.
Yeah, you mess with his family, and his son just got his own title, so you can't do that.
Yeah, alright, that's gonna do it for this week's Justice League. I liked it.
I liked it. This storyline's been okay.
I think once he got out of the opening storyline, I think he's really found his story. I mean, obviously we got some callbacks to the earlier storyline, especially when you got the Aquaman going back to the past. We went to the Themyscira, and they mentioned the vibrating
diamonds. No, they didn't go to Themyscira. They went to Greece.
Oh, my mistake. Whenever I read a DC book and I see that, I assumed it. But you're right, because there were men mixed up with the women, so it couldn't have been that. But they mentioned that, like, oh, these crystals are singing, blah, blah, blah. So, obviously, harking back to the initial opening storyline. Mm-hmm. As we saw, he obviously has something lined up with that, so I'm curious to see where that goes.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right. Batman issue 18, writer Tom King, art by David Finch.
This is really good.
It's fantastic.
What they did was they contrasted, and when I say contrasted, I mean one panel would be Batman as a child and the next panel would be Bane as a child.
Yeah, really what you had was a 4x2 setup where the left part of the comic book was set up with all the, I guess, things that Bruce had to deal with the wake of his parents being dead, and then on the right, you saw what it was like for Bane growing up. And obviously...
Yeah, Bane had a similar history. Like, Bane's mom died, and he ended up in this fucking prison. And he grew up in the prison, but he didn't have anyone to raise him. He just kind of had to learn how to live on his own. And Batman had Alfred to take care of him.
And they show the parallels between them. They're trying to... at least get over the fact that, you know, Bane's obviously the way he is because, to a degree, because of his environment growing up. Basically, we're trying to get over the nature versus nurture thing in this book.
Yeah, and, Bane's in town to get Psycho Pirate. Mm-hmm. And, so Batman's fighting him, and Batman's kind of getting the shit kicked out of him. The deal was Bane was going to beat him into submission, but then his big thing was, like, he knows Batman ain't gonna give up, so they tried to evacuate, like, a large portion of Gotham, but, Bane had some hostages, and he was gonna kill him if Batman didn't give him Psycho Pirate. So, what we found out was Batman, in taking the beating, was just buying time, because Catwoman ended up calling, and she took Bane's men, who were holding the hostages, freed the hostages, tied them up in the same way the Robins were tied up by Bane.
Yeah, that's another thing. We got to follow up from the last issue because we got the big tease from the last issue that it looked like Bane had killed the Robins because when we saw them, we thought...
Shit out of them.
Yeah, we thought, we just assumed they were either going to be dummies in effigy or they were going to be beat up. Turns out they were beat up and they were hung up, but they weren't killed. Obviously, they had I Am Bane written on them, but they were fine for the most part, but... Batman was quick to send them to Superman so he can have them in his Fortress of Solitude so they can kind of heal and then just be out of Bane's
reach.
Basically, yeah. And then what's funny here is you had a bit of a parallel when Catwoman had beat up Bane's men.
And she wrote, "I am Cat" on their chest. That's cute. Bane's, his leverage is gone now. Catwoman took care of that, so Batman's talking shit to him, and he walks into Arkham, and he knows Bane's gonna follow him. Mm-hmm. So he's got, cause he was goading him to follow him. I'm not sure why he wants him to come into Arkham.
Isn't that where Gotham Girl is?
Huh?
Isn't that where Gotham Girl is?
Yeah, but she's supposed to be getting fixed. Like, with Psycho Pirate, mm-hmm. and he wants Psycho Pirate, so I don't know why you would be bringing him to Arkham, but whatever, Batman, maybe he wants to lock him up in Arkham. I don't know. Batman has a plan, so.
Well then, presuming Gotham Girl's gonna be okay, Gotham Girl could probably make short work of Bane.
Yeah, but Batman could too, like, whatever, we'll see. But Batman went into Arkham while talking shit, and Bane gets so pissed off that he fucking charges through the door and heads after Batman, and then the issue ended. This is a good, good storyline. And, I love Tom King. He's just great.
I was thinking about Tom King's run on Batman for a second, and if it wasn't for the, Night of the Monster Man, even though I will also admit, King co-writing that actually made it pretty decent.
Yeah, I think it was better for his help.
I feel like he's now getting into his groove as far as all things Batman. And that's funny I mentioned that because I think in a couple of issues we're going to get the crossover with the Flash and all the Rebirth stuff with the Watchmen.
But I'm really interested in that story, and King, you know, he was tweeting about it, so he's obviously at least somewhat excited.
I know, but it's so sad because it's like King is telling a really good story here with Bane and Batman. But unfortunately, like it feels like it's being interrupted every couple of issues.
It's okay. Batman's gonna beat Bane, and then we can move on to this thing. Yeah. It's fine because Batman's coming out again next week. Like, this book's coming out at rapid pace.
You mean in 2 weeks?
Or the week after next? Next week, isn't it?
What's that?
No, it's
bi-weekly.
Wait, yeah, it's coming out. Okay,
the week after next.
When I'm saying it's coming out next week, I do mean next week, but I forget how we do this show. So
it's all very confusing to everybody.
It is. It is. I'm sorry.
All right. As long as we're dealing with time travel and general confusion, Fall and Rise of Captain Atom, Issue 3, writer Kerry Bates, art by Will Connor.
Okay. So in the last issue, he was in the past after he exploded, but he got sucked back into the future. So the government recovered him, but they found that his powers are different now. Like Captain Atom before, he was a being of pure energy, and he was prone to exploding. Mm-hmm. Well, now they don't think he really has the matter manipulation powers, but he's still super strong, super fast. He can still shoot the fucking laser blasts and all that. He's got most of his powers. But now he can change from that form to his human form, which he could not do before. So he can have a normal life. So the first thing he wants to know is, where's his wife? Because he got married in the past. And they're like, "Oh, well, we want to do this other stuff first." And he's like, "No, you fucking take me to my wife now or this is going to end." So he's like, "All right, the drone will show you your wife, I guess." And of course his wife is dead. She died, you know, she wasn't killed or anything. She died in a car accident a couple years after he disappeared, but he feels terrible because he just disappeared into thin air. So his wife would have thought that, you know, he left her and never said anything. So yeah, he feels terrible about it. But they're trying to tell him, you know, oh, it's not your fault, blah, blah, blah. So he goes back and the general guy, like his old handler, is telling him, okay, so here's the deal. When you left last time, like, you pretty much blew up a big part of a city. So you can't be the same person. But now we can have you be like, you work for us, but you'll also be like a superhero who people respect and admire. So we've created a backstory for you and a new identity, and we're going to get you like a really nice apartment. It's going to be fully furnished. Everything's paid for, but you work for us. And he's talking to him. He's like, man, you used to be a real big dick to me. And he's like, oh yeah, well, you know, you're going to get a second chance here.
They mentioned the one incident where he had the meltdown. And they're like, yeah, the public doesn't really trust Captain Atom, so we need you to be this new superhero.
Yeah. He called it Captain Atom version 2.0, like Matt Hardy.
He was basically backmailing him. He's like, we're going to give you all this stuff.
Well, it got worse later.
Yeah.
Because what happened was he makes him this offer, and then he's like, all right, we're going to go test your powers now. And they find out, you know, his powers are pretty much unlimited. Like, they couldn't even test for how much this guy could do because he could do so much. And then General's like, all right, so what do you think to the deal? And he's like, yeah, I appreciate it, but I'm not going to take the deal because I'm kind of going to be my own man. Like, I don't want to be like your slave anymore. And he's like, oh, okay, well, I thought you might say that. So that's when I want to show you this. And fucking three people died when he blew up. He's like, so you can be you, but you at least have three cases of manslaughter.
It's like, and the Justice League is kind of looking for you.
Yeah, because you made the Justice League look bad. So they're not happy about that. And that's bullshit. Fucking Justice League aren't like this prick.
Well, yeah, we've seen so far, especially with the first issue, they established this guy is not exactly the nicest guy. So
yeah.
You take whatever he says with a grain of salt.
So he basically tells him, I'm going to blackmail you into having to work for us. And Captain Adam's like, fuck you, and he shoots a big laser blast and blows up his Jeep with him in it.
He's like, but he's
leaves
like,
him alive.
He did the gimmick where he's like, you know, I got out of that Jeep. He's like, yeah.
He didn't get out of the Jeep. He was still sitting in the driver's seat.
Oh,
he blew up everything around him.
He's like, how did you know I'd be fine? He's like, I didn't know.
Yeah. And then, you know, he left, but. So now the or at least parts of the government is after him, and presumably the Justice League is after him, and everybody in the world hates him. But he was in his new apartment, which he recognized, like, I probably won't have this for long, but I'm gonna enjoy it while I got it. And somebody sent him a tablet or a picture. And it was a picture of a kid visiting the mom's grave. And it said, they didn't tell you this, but you have a 17-year-old son. And then it was signed like a friend or something. So, cause his wife was pregnant when he disappeared. Mm-hmm. He didn't know that because she didn't have a chance to tell him. Like, he got off the phone to go do his thing, and that's what led to him blowing up again and getting sucked back into the future. Mm-hmm. So, He wouldn't have known he had a kid, but they would have known because due to quantum fuckery, they were able to monitor him when he was in the past. So, yeah, he's got a friend. I think it might be that doctor guy.
Yeah, he may have stuck around, but the thing is, he was already kind of old in the 90s. I don't know if he'd still be around.
Well, yeah, but he was in this issue.
Oh, was he now? I'm sorry.
Yeah, he was the one talking to him before the Dick General got involved.
So do you think it's him then? It certainly could.
Well, yeah, because they didn't. I mean, he's never been mean to Captain Atom. It's just the military guy is mean to him, but the doctor isn't. So
it's the Scooby-Doo thing where that's the only other character in the book. It must be him.
Well, yeah. There's that, too. But no, this series is still good. It's I don't understand the end game. Like, what do you do with this? Do you just like, it's like, oh, okay, Captain Atom's a character now, but he won't kill everyone.
Yeah,
it just seems weird that they do a mini series just to reintroduce a character.
I mean, it's really good, and I'm certainly not complaining that we're getting this really well-written story, but at the same time, you wonder, especially with, you know, all things Rebirth, it seems, everything seems to be working towards something where this is specifically a miniseries that just seems like, it's telling a really good story of Captain Atom, but at the same time, it's not really going anywhere.
And it's not, I mean, this is the only good Captain Atom storyline that's ever been told. Mm-hmm. He's not exactly a beloved character.
No.
So, you know, it's good, and I want to see where it goes. I just don't know how it fits into anything. And it might not.
No, it certainly might not. But we still got a few more issues left to go. I believe 3 more issues left to go. So I'm curious to see what they do with the Sun
stuff. Wasn't this issue 4?
I believe it was issue 3. Let me look it up real quick. No, this was issue 3.
Okay, yeah. 3 more issues.
Yeah, first issue dealt with him melting down. Second issue was him in the past. And this third issue has dealt with him coming back and dealing with the military.
Okay.
Midnighter and Apollo, issue 3. Actually, you know what? I have that wrong, because this is issue 6. So maybe I have all my numbers wrong. Maybe you are right. Let's see if I can fix this real quick. You still there?
Yeah, I'm waiting for you.
Oh, sorry. I said Midnighter and Apollo, issue 6. Writer Steve Orlando, art by Fernando Blanco.
I thought you said you were looking something up. Okay, no. So I don't want to be negative, and this did have a happy ending, but I still thought this is the most disappointing issue of the run. I think because...
The ending?
Well, they're doing, like, the Orpheus story, so you assume one of these characters is going to die. Mm-hmm. Since they really don't have much of a place in the DC universe, I didn't see any harm in killing them. Now, that's not the happy ending.
That's funny, because that's the thing I've been arguing from the beginning. It's like, oh, they're going to kill them off so they can do something in Wildstorm. And you're like, yeah, I don't know if you want that for the 2 gay characters in the DC universe. Like, you have to kill them. And it's like, well, this isn't like anything else you could do with them in the DC universe. And if they're going to be in Wildstorm, it's like, why not just kill them off?
They didn't have to kill both of them. They just had to kill one of them to go along with the Orpheus story. Mm. You know, one of them has to stay in hell. But they didn't do that. What they did was, he had told Midnighter that Apollo was gone, like he was dead. Totally dead. But as it turned out, Apollo, when he played the little game with him on guessing why he has the name Apollo, Neuron got it wrong. And the deal was he'd set him free and he'd give him his powers back. But he also teleported him way to the fuck end of hell, mm-hmm, because he knew Midnighter was coming. So Midnighter is getting the shit kicked out of him by Neuron because he has no powers and he's fighting the devil.
And his horde of undead zombies.
Yeah, but luckily, Apollo showed up and Apollo is fucking Superman powered. So he, in an amazing scene, he flies in and fucking decks Neuron so hard. Flies back, he like breaks a wall, he breaks his throne, lands in his throne, and he's completely fucked up. Like one punch from Apollo just ended this dude. And then he's like, but the candle that Midnighter used to get there was running down. And if that candle runs down, the portal's gone and he stays in hell. So they have to bust ass to, you know, get to the candle, and they do it, and they get out, and then they go hang out with their friends.
The before that, there was this part where Midnighter's telling him, "You blew me up. How'd you know I wasn't the bendable one?"
And he's like, "Oh, come on! Like, I don't know what the back of your head looks like." And I'm like, you know, I don't like to think that Midnighter is the sub in this relationship. That's what bothered me about that. Midnighter's a fucking badass. But you know what? Maybe in the sack he likes to give up a little bit.
Because he's so powerful.
The funny thing is, this is a book about a gay couple, and I had no problem with it. Whereas another book we're going to talk about, I had a huge problem. It was a nice ending, but I mean, the characters are in no different spot than they were in before.
No, if anything, this ended them with, and they were going back and forth with the idea of, it's like, well, should we kill still? Cause it's like, I saw what it was like to have someone who you love being ripped away from you. He's like, and you could tell they were kind of skeptical on the idea of killing going forward.
No, they weren't. That was the point. Midnighter gave this speech and he's like, okay, Paul, I got to talk to you though. He's like, after being in hell and seeing all these people and knowing like I took them away from their families and stuff, he's like, it still doesn't change anything I do and I'm still going to kill people. He's like, are you okay with that? And Apollo basically said, yeah, I'm okay with it.
Of all people to ask that though, Apollo.
He's like, yeah, they're bad people. I'm okay with killing them. So then they go off to go break some spines, I think is what Midnighter said. And then it ended, which is fine because the final issue, I mean, they were victorious. They still love each other and they still love, murdering criminals. This was the point of it. Now, I personally would have liked the last scene to be them in costume. And it wasn't. It was them in just clothes walking down a hallway. I thought we could have had a more dramatic closing. But, you know, he wanted to give it a happy ending and he did. And it was a good 6-issue mini and it got over the characters' personalities. And I had no issues with this. I mean, yeah, I would have liked something bigger. The thing is, I'm a really big fan of both of these characters. And I was hoping against hope that the end of this series would put them in either in the new Wildstorm or remove them from the board or put them in some higher position in the DC universe. And I got none of those things.
Nope.
And Midnighter doesn't currently have a book. And Apollo doesn't currently have a book, so I don't know where I'm going to see them, or if I'm going to see them.
That's what that makes me wonder. It's like, okay, you told a really good Midnight and Apollo story, but with that said, it's like, that's all you did? You didn't set anything up?
Yeah, like, is this, maybe it was a test thing, like, maybe they want to do a book, and they just want to see how this sold? Awesome. To see if there's a market?
Which, if that's the case, I'm good, because, remember, I'm the one that's been championing that from day one. I'm like, just do the miniseries. If it takes off, you can do a series. If it doesn't, you don't have to do the series and then disappoint everybody if it starts to get good.
And it's like, since everybody has, since every comic company seems to have these quotas now, it's like, why can't we have a book about the gay couple? Like, at least these characters, when, you know, this is an Iceman, where after the character had been around for 60 years and had many relationships with women, they suddenly decided, oh, he's gay. By the way, Iceman, not at all any more over than he was before he was gay.
I'm gonna blame these Bendis for that, though.
These characters have been gay since they were created, and they've been around for a while. Give them their fucking book if you want to have your, you know, then you can say, like, oh, we have a book with a gay couple. Like, and do it with these guys, because they're good fucking characters.
And it's not like a flamboyant, over-the-top thing. It's just like, that's just the way they are.
Yeah, they're two gay dudes, and they love each other.
They're the logical conclusion for Batman and Superman.
Yeah, and they're they're different, because Apollo is not as hardcore as Midnighter. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the Batman-Superman thing is why they don't get more high profile. Because they are the gay Batman and Superman.
Well, that kill.
And I don't know if DC's comfortable with that. Well, yeah, they kill too. But I mean, that's what they were created for. It's just, I'm not sure DC's comfortable with that. And also, you do have to question, when you already have a Justice League with a Batman and a Superman, why do you need another Batman and Superman, but they kill? Like, they don't really fit into the Justice League, because the Justice League doesn't kill. Couldn't they have thrown these guys on the fucking, on the Justice League America?
That would actually have been an interesting idea.
Yeah, cause they're human. That was, well, Apollo's not, but they're at least as human as, you know, Lobo.
And Ray.
And Ray. Yeah, like, you could have thrown them on there just for something for them to do. But they didn't. It's okay. And Midnighter did, he was referenced in an issue of Batman. Nightwing mentioned him.
Yeah.
So, he is in the DC universe. It's just, it's odd that there's a character as powerful as Apollo, and he's not more of a focus.
Well, this is the same universe that also we're questioning, how does this new Captain Atom fit, sort of going to what the last book we just covered. It's like, okay, yeah. You're setting up all these great, powerful characters and then proceeding to do nothing with them.
Well, DC's always, their characters have always been stronger than Marvel characters. Like, Apollo and Superman and Captain Atom, they could fucking kill Spider-Man without thinking about it.
Yeah.
Their Thanos is not as threatening if you have Superman. So, that's just been the way, one of the big differences between Marvel and DC. You know, Quicksilver is nowhere near as fast as the Flash, and he can't do all the extra shit. That's just the way it is. But, I don't know. I still think these characters are underutilized, but I'm happy that they got their own mini.
Yes. All right. We're not going to stray too far from DC, but going to Young Animal. I know you didn't read this week's Shade the Changing Girl issue 6, writer Sesto Catalucci, art by Marley Zaccone. I'll catch you up on all the things that happened in this week's Shade. Obviously, it picked up where we left off with the last issue, where Loma Shade. Actually, I got the last name right. Loma Shade and Megan were fighting over the body. They did the gimmick where Megan was trying to fight for the body back, but Loma kept telling her, "Is like, okay, first of all, everybody hates you. Nobody wants you back. Second of all, if you were to come back, you were to pick up where you left off. And last where you left off was drowning in the, having drowned in the ocean, or the, not the ocean, that pool, or that lake.
It was a lake.
Yeah, you would be in a coma still if you were to take over this body again. He's like, and there's no guarantee that you would, snap out of it. There's a good chance that you'd just be dead. And Megan's all, I don't care. It's my life. It's my body. It's like, you shouldn't have control over that. Basically, they went back and forth. Megan had haunted all of her students into fear. He's like, I'm gonna come back and I'm gonna get revenge on all you guys, basically. And then it's like, that's what turned the tide, because for the most part, Loma would have been kind of weird, but she'd been kind of nice to everybody, and everyone got to, you know, with the exception of maybe the boyfriend had won everybody over. So that's what turned the tide and what allowed Loma to win over the control of the body. And basically going forward is that Megan is no longer, they alluded that she disappeared, but I don't know if she's necessarily dead. So I'm glad we got a logical conclusion, because with this kind of story, obviously when we read, I think it was Descender, I thought they were going to go with the easy out of, you know, oh, they teased the conclusion, but it's Megan back in control and she's pretending to be Loma. But no, they clearly tease that the series going forward is going to be Loma as this girl having to exist on Earth. So that's pretty much how this issue ended.
Okay.
All right. That's going to do it for the DC portion of the show. Let's move on to Image with Brett Queens, issue 1, volume 2.
Okay, so this is volume 2 because we finally have a new artist. Mm-hmm. A very good new artist, I thought. Enjoyed the art quite a bit. And the book read like an issue of Rat Queens. But since it's a new volume, they switched things up a little bit. They gave us a new member of the team, Braga, the big orc chick. Who used to be a dude. Is on the team now. And they are at least temporarily up against Dwarf Girl's brother, who hilariously Hannah the Magic Girl, her dad, they rescued him. Mm-hmm. So he's like chilling at the house, and he's kind of like their den leader now.
my question for that is, when did all this happen? Did this happen off panel?
I don't recall that happening, but I believe there was an annual or something that we didn't read.
Because it's like they teased that stuff a couple of issues back, and then they teased that Hannah had quit the Rat Queens. And then magically, this new volume, she's magically back on the team, and they never mention anything as to why she's back on the team.
I'm willing to just let it go. Mm. So I'm okay with it. But Hannah's dad is there, and they're getting back into adventuring. So they're going out on a quest. And that's, Braga came with them. That's how she ended up a member of the Rat Queens. When they show up, they find, Dwarf Girl's brother is there, and he has formed his own team called, I believe, were they like the Cat Kings?
The Cat Kings, yes.
Yeah. He formed a team called the Cat Kings, which is, as Betty said, shitty male versions of them. they had a fungus druid who had a fucking this is the funniest thing in the book. When they first walk into the tower, where the monster is, there's just this fucking weird looking thing standing there, and Hannah goes, "That's the cutest goddamn thing I've ever seen in my life." It's like a little mushroom guy.
But the thing is, it's like, it's fully, sentient, right? But the thing is, it doesn't
have a thing. Well, it can't talk, but it, yeah, and her brother said, yeah, and I thought it was creepy how he didn't have eyes, so I had the magic guy make him a pair of googly eyes. And Betty was pissed off because she's like, wait a minute, this is me? Cause, you know, they all, except for Braga, because she joined the team as they were entering the building. He didn't get a copy of her, but all the other ones he had copies of, and the fucking copy of Betty was this little mushroom guy. But Betty loved him. She thought he was great because he didn't talk.
Yeah, because first you look at him, and he looks kind of off, but whatever. He was looking right at him, but he wasn't looking directly at him. And you're like, something's off with this guy. Like, he's obviously kind of, you know, it's a little cute character. Obviously, it's a little sawed-off little mushroom character. But when they mentioned,
yeah, but they said he doesn't even do anything. He just follows them around. Well, anyway, so the Cat Kings had killed the bear, and they thought that they were going to get the money now. They completed the quest. And the only reason her brother's there is to fuck with her. But then she's like, yeah, that wasn't the quest, that is. And this big fucking monster bird thing comes down. So they're getting ready to fight it. And Betty immediately jumps at it with the knives, but then realizes, oh shit, she's jumping right at its fucking mouth and it eats her. So they all get pissed off and they all go to attack the thing, but they don't make any progress. The issue ends with Betty wakes up and she's in its stomach. Mm-hmm. And then this little goblin looking thing runs up to her and he's like, hey, I'm a gut merchant. And then the next issue, the tease, that's kind of where it ended. And the tease for the next issue was never trust a guts merchant.
Ooh.
So that's going to be trouble, but it's Betty and she's the bomb. So she's probably just going to smoke them up, eat some candy.
There you go.
And fucking get like a bomb from this thing and blow her way out. Betty's going to save the day.
Okay. You know what? I'm looking at the solicit, not the write up for this book, and they're soliciting it as a fresh soft reboot for the series.
But so, they referred to stuff that happened in the last series.
But the thing is, that's why it's a soft reboot in the sense that they had storylines that they had, you know,
oh, they just
going
didn't finish
on the last issue. And then they felt like maybe they dealt with all that stuff off panel. I mean, I think maybe I have to do some research later, but it seems like, especially the way they solicited this, if this is their just way of, okay, everything got settled off panel, going forward, we're telling a bunch of new stories.
And that's fine, cause it's a fun series and the new artist is good. So, the characters all seem to be identical. Mm. Like there's nothing different about any of them. But no, I'm okay with this. I will continue to read this book. I've always I've always thought this was a fun little book.
Yeah, this is one of the few books I think with this and, Saga, I think the three of us when Dave was still on the show, we were like, we kept hearing about Saga, so it's one of these things to where we actually did some catch up and read all the issues, but I think Rat Queens was specifically recommended to us and we've loved it ever since.
Yeah.
And the creative on this book is Curtis J. Wiebe, art by Owen Guiney.
I wonder how long it took him to find a new artist.
Well, because remember we had that story that going forward was going to exist as a webcomic. That's why I'm thinking maybe they dealt with all the stuff with the webcomic series. But if they're soliciting this as a soft reboot, I presume that's their way of saying, okay, we're starting off fresh. All the stuff that happened, it happened. But all the dangling threads, they all tied up. Because, yeah, they mentioned all the stuff with the dad, but then there was also the storyline with Betty and this fraternal order of, like, elves or something. And I don't know if that resolved itself or not, but that's something we're just going to look forward to. I hope we get some resolution on that, because I'm fine not getting all the hand stuff not resolved, but that storyline seemed to look like it was going somewhere.
Yeah, no, I'm okay with it. If they don't have to bog down the issue one with explaining what happened to close up the last storyline, like, I'm 100% fine with that. I don't care that they had to do it.
Okay, let's move on to our next book, Royal City, Issue 1, writer and artist Jeff Lemire.
Okay, it opens up with a old guy who's in the house with his wife, and he doesn't really get along with her that well. She's kind of a bitch. So he tells her he's going out to his workshop, and while he's in his workshop, he gets a little message thing that says, like, dad, through, like, this old radio he's working on or something. So he has a stroke, which is bad. Then we cut to another guy who's apparently a writer, and he's talking to his editor. You know, why the fuck haven't you turned this book in? You've had an extra year, blah, 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 blah. Oh, I gotta take care of this stuff with my family. My dad had a stroke. There is a woman who is his sister and the guy's daughter. The book's all about this family, is what I'm getting across here.
Yeah, they come off as a family that doesn't get along, but they're certainly not dysfunctional.
Some of them get along, but yeah. They're all the children are grown. So, there's the sister, the only sister, I presume, who is like a land developer. And, the city it takes place in, Royal City, it was a smallish sized city that, was largely built around this giant factory. But the factory has been losing money for the last 10 years. And all the young people in the town are basically fleeing to the city and getting out as soon as they can. Mm-hmm. So she's meeting with the owner of the factory to try to sell him on this, get rid of the factory. You build this resort, because they have a river running through the town. She's like, we do this resort on the river, and it's got this full, super duper golf course behind it. And then, all the businesses around it will be revitalized, and this will be better. It's good for the city. It'll
revitalize the city.
Yeah, because your factory ain't doing it anymore. And he tells her, he'll think about it. The problem with this is her husband works at the factory, and everyone in the family hates her because, there's not a lot of people in this town, and most of the people who live in the town work at that factory. And she wants to get rid of it. Of course, her argument is, well, yeah, but the factory is pretty much dead and dying, and this is something that will improve the city, and it will provide more jobs for people. So it'd be a good thing, but they're not looking at it that way, because this is all they know. So writer brother and her go to see the mom and the dad in the hospital, and the dad... They basically said, okay, he had the stroke, but there might be brain damage, but we don't know how much until he wakes up. Like, he could be fine. He could be totally fucked. We don't know yet. then they talk about Richie, the other brother, who's like a fucking drunk loser.
Yeah, he's like, the thing is, he also works at the factory, but the thing is, the reason why he's a drunk loser, cause his dad runs the factory, so he's like, I can do whatever I want. He's like, I cannot go into work for a whole week and nothing will ever happen to me. Woohoo.
Oh no, it's not his dad. His dad doesn't run the family. It's his sister's brother is like the foreman.
There you go.
That's what it is. And he said, well, he's banging our sister. He'll cover for us. So they don't do shit, but Ryder brother, he keeps seeing Timmy or Tommy. I forget whoever it is. They haven't revealed that yet, but, so some shit happens. Eventually he ends up at Tommy's grave, but Tommy is standing behind it. So it's a ghost story.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, it's 100% normal. It's just a normal story. Yeah, this is
the one thing I kept bringing this. I'm like, I get the feeling Jeff Lemire, aside from the art that he gets to draw in this book, would be better suited just writing novels, because we've seen he can tell regular stories in a regular world, and you know they're really good stories. And I'm just like, if you can write this caliber of stuff and it's really good, it's like, why not just pursue that? Like, he's obviously a very good artist. He's probably a big fan of comic books, obviously. But with that said, I don't know if his writing style is suited for comics, and that's not necessarily a bad thing.
The thing is, I like variety in comics. Mm. And a book like this, like books like this are done. There's a million indie books that are, you know, like this is someone's life books where it's just about normal people doing normal shit. I like that like a name writer is doing it.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it puts a little more focus on it. But I mean, this is what comics should be. It should be a wide variety of stories. That there's no reason you can't tell a story you tell on a TV show or a movie in a comic. Absolutely no reason you can't do that. And I'm totally fine with this because I enjoyed this. The writing's very good. The characters are good. He's very good at developing characters quickly. And it's different. I know I'm not going to read anything else that's like this. And I like that. And his art, you know, fits it pretty spot on. So, yeah,
pretty much nailed it.
I was a fan.
What's that?
I was a fan. I liked this.
As am I. I'm just like, this just seems really highbrow. maybe I have battered wife syndrome with the big two. I'm like,
you want stupid stories about superheroes punching things?
It's like, that's what I deserve.
Well, yeah, but your favorite Marvel book forever was Vision, which, well, while it was about a robot, I mean, it was fairly high concept.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to Walking Dead 165, writer Robert Kirkman, art by Chadley Arlord.
They killed Andrea.
Pretty much.
I didn't care. I've told you before. Character deaths in this series have no effect on me anymore because so many of them have died. I'm not attached to any of these characters except possibly Negan and Eugene, who they tease dying in this. Oh, they also killed Dwight.
A lot of folks died.
Yeah, so they killed two characters. Well, they probably thought, you know, we haven't killed anyone in a while, so we got to kill some people. What happened was, they were driving the big group of zombies to the ocean, which is actually a perfect plan because, you know, the zombies move towards sound. The ocean is loud.
so just like lemmings to a cliff, you just see all the zombies just going into the ocean, just dying.
Yeah, because it wasn't just, you know, they're walking into the ocean. It was a fucking cliff. And, so they got him near the cliff, and then they heard the sound, and they just fucking walked off the cliff. But there were problems because, like, the herd of zombies was so big that it would, like, split off. Mm-hmm. So they had to keep running back to get more of them. Eugene at one point, I don't know if he decided he wanted to die or what, but he said, like, you guys go on and draw him away, and I'll stay behind and I'll just go through the middle and it'll be all right. which they told him wasn't going to work, and it didn't, because he fucking tries going through all these zombies on his horse, and the zombies ate his goddamn horse and knocked him down.
They try to say if he had just gone through it without being skeptical, he would have been okay. But he's like, oh, I don't think I'm going to make it through it. He's like, trust us, you'll be just fine. And obviously he's doing it half-heartedly, so obviously his horse gets attacked, and he trips, and he falls, and it looks like he's going to die in the zombie horde.
But they saved him. Andrea saved him. And she's going away, and when they get out of the big group of zombies, she has it doesn't look like a bite, but she has something. She's bleeding from the neck.
It looks like there's a chunk. It looks like a bite to me, because it looks like, you know, sort of the cartoony kind of bite you'd often see.
It theoretically could be a swerve.
Yeah.
Like she cut herself on something. Like it could be a swerve. But what was not a swerve was earlier, the saviors who have been dicks, they came upon Dwight and friends and fucking said like, yeah, we're fucking taking over now. And they stabbed Dwight in the gut and kill him. Negan and Rick are still getting along. Sort of. Negan has convinced their buddies. And,
because there's this one scene where they're obviously Negan's fighting the zombies, and he starts to look like he's getting in some deep water, and Rick is there Rick to bail him out. He's like, "You saved my life. You didn't have to do that." It's like, that means we're friends now, right?
And Rick's just like, "Shut the fuck up."
I like seeing the human side of Negan now.
He's fun. Yeah. Good issue. Enjoyable.
Yeah. As long as we're talking, something Kirkman, had done, obviously I mentioned earlier, I was pitching stories to you, and I was mentioning how this week at Emerald City, Comic Con, they had done sort of an Image Founder panel. And obviously Kirkman there is talking about how great it is to work for Image. And he's like, oh yeah, thanks to Image, I was, my show got picked up. I was able to be on the couch of Talking Dead. He's all, if I had been a Dark Horse, Mike Richardson would have been on the couch. If it had been at Boom Studios, Ross Ritchie would have been on the couch. If the book had been at Valiant, no one would have heard of The Walking Dead.
Dick.
Shots fired!
Why don't you go fucking steal money from your co-creators, Kirkman, you bastard. And then get sued and lose. You fucker.
I just thought that was funny, but at the same time we're a bit of a Valiant homer, so it hurt a little bit, but it's, you know, it's all in good fun.
Yeah, it's fine.
All right, so move on to Marvel with Champions issue 6, writer Mark Waid, art by Humberto Ramos.
This is the most amazing setup for a storyline ever in this book.
You know the first panel of this I sent to our old co-host Dave, right?
What was the first panel?
The jacket.
Oh. So the champions are like the social justice superheroes, right? So they have created a group of villains for them. They are rich douchebags who work for, I guess, the evil corporations, mm-hmm. who are just fucking terrible people. Like, they send them to break up protests and stuff and like clean out like homeless people who are like squatting in abandoned buildings. Mm-hmm. They're horrible people. And at one point one of them has like, she has some kind of like pheromone powers, like guys on fucker. And the other one can cause fear in people. So what they did was they had cleaned out like this little homeless tent city. And then they went and got two of the homeless guys and they told them like, hey, we feel really bad for what he did, but we're going to help all you guys out. But here we got lots of food and stuff here. And then they made bets.
This is awesome.
And one of them made one of the guys think she really liked him. And one of them made the guy afraid of everything.
Like, let's see which one's stronger.
Yeah, and they just wanted to see who'd throw the first punch. They were betting on this, fucking with the guys. And then the guys, like, kind of wake up out of it. And they're like, what the fuck is wrong with you people? You play with people's lives like this? And they basically just said, oh, well, you guys don't matter. It's all right. Like, they're terrible people. And then in the end, what they did was he's like, oh, you're just going to let them go? I wanted to see them fight more. And she's like, oh, don't worry. I put something else in there. And they end up going to the, I don't know if they went to the police station or the hospital. Yeah. They go to the police station and the one dude's, you know, his buddy beat the shit out of him. And they walk in and she's got him mind controlled and he goes, they're like, who did this to you? And he's like, the champions. So they're actively fucking with the champions now. But the thing is, like I said, they're another team of young superheroes, but completely different.
They're called the Freelancers.
Yes. It is fucking great.
It's exactly what you would think it is. Obviously, if the champions are going to be social justice warriors, the Freelancers are mustache-twirling evil corporatists.
Yeah, it's fucking great.
The rest of this issue focused on the champions. They were just, they were playing
paintball.
Paintball was a fun issue. They did some gimmick where they were teasing that Nova was potentially a better leader than Cyclops.
But then he ended up losing. Mm-hmm. So,
Funny issue. My only nitpick is, did we ever get a resolution from the last storyline with the racist cop or the racist chief?
Yeah, they got him arrested because the other cop helped them to prove that, like, he was the one behind all the bad shit that was going on. Mm.
I don't remember any of this happening, issue, by the
way. One-ish storyline.
Oh, okay. I don't remember any of this.
This is much better than that.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, oddly, I have no issue with these characters' social justice thing.
Well, because the thing is, it's so, as we mentioned with some books, I don't like it when it's kind of serious, where this is clearly supposed to be a cartoon. This is clearly, you know, over the top mustache twirling villain, so I'm fine with it.
Well, the other thing is they're not sitting on Facebook giving speeches about how they need to help the poor and then doing jack shit. Like, they're actually going out and doing things.
And let's be honest, they're helping folks, but they're not really preaching anything, so.
No. Like, in the last issue, they went after a blatantly racist cop who was burning mosques down. Like, it's a little more serious, the things that they're helping with. And to their credit, the Avengers would not help with these things. So it all makes sense. It's all consistent. Mm-hmm. And I'm totally okay with that. So, yeah, it's a thumbs up. It's a fun book.
Okay, so from one Wade series to another, Avengers issue 5, like I mentioned earlier, writer Mark Waid, art by Mike Del Mundo.
I hated this issue much less than the previous four.
Thank God. When you mentioned hated, I'm like, dude, it's a good book. Stop crapping on it.
No, I have not really liked, I kind of liked the last issue that was like Kang backstory, mm-hmm. but said it was kind of a pointless issue because I already know Kang's backstory. This issue I like more though. Vision from the future came back and met with Vision from the past.
The present,
and is going to help them to defeat Kang once and for all. And of course, they have their doubts about this Vision from the future. I think largely because he looks creepy as fuck.
Yeah,
you know, I looked at him and I didn't trust him.
Yeah, he's wearing the cape. I mean, he doesn't have the cape anymore, and he has sort of looks like a spider insignia, but it's all lit up, and
he looks much less human.
Yeah, and he doesn't have like the little mini hood that's built in onto his head. He's just got the bald red head.
And it's kind of pointed now.
Yeah, it looks
like it's split. Vision looks vaguely human, and this one does not look really human at all.
Yeah, he looks clearly robotic.
Yeah, or like an alien or something.
But he seems to be on the level of he's recruiting the Avengers, and obviously part of stopping Kang is going to the end of the time where obviously, his base of operation, all the things he has set up there.
But they had to find a way to throw Kang off guard. So what they did was they gathered Avengers from various time Avengers groups from various time periods including the original Avengers. They didn't get the Jacket Avengers.
Unfortunately.
But they did get the group of Avengers that had Black Knight, but not in a jacket, unfortunately.
They would be disappointed.
Yeah, but they got these various groups of Avengers and explained to them what was going on. And because of, they actually brought up the specific personalities of the Avengers at this time and knew how to talk to them to get them to agree to this.
Actually, that's the thing. No, they appealed to them because they were obviously Avengers and they wanted to do the right thing and they're used to fighting Kang. But when they're fighting, I think it's Spider-Man talks to Hulk and he talks to them like, you'd normally expect to talk to Hulk like, oh, Hulk needs to smash. And then Hulk just turns to him. It's like, why are you talking to me like I'm an idiot?
Yeah, because it was the time period before Hulk was an idiot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was funny. And they're going to get Kang at his base at the end of time. But there are problems with that because if they like got caught by another Kang from another time period.
Mm-hmm.
And if they stop that Kang, then the entire situation that led to Vision meeting future Vision and doing this time traveling adventure would not happen because they stopped Kang before it happened. It's all very confusing and time travel-y. It made sense in the context of the book.
You know, I think has something to say on the matter. Colonel Campbell from Metal Gear Solid.
You've created a time paradox.
What have you done? Change the future. You've created a time paradox.
Well, this story did deal with time paradoxes. So, but yeah, we're moving forward with the Kang thing, and I'm okay with Kang. I just feel like Kang has been around a lot in books lately.
Well, specifically this series, obviously since it renumbered, or actually, I would say this is a new series going forward, because the last series was all new, all different Avengers, and it was a very different team dynamic, different book. Ever since the series started, there was a couple issues, I think, where it was kind of slow, and I feel like he kind of didn't know the story he was telling. Now going forward, it seems like Mark Waid has a direction, and I'm interested in this book now, because this was one of these books that were on the cusp of being dropped. And now I don't think it's in that danger anymore.
No. I want to see where it goes.
Hawkeye issue 4, writer Kelly Thompson, art by Leonardo Romero. Speaking of that kind of thing, I love this issue of Hawkeye. I think I've had my issues, especially with the first issue of Hawkeye. This is the first time I read this new Hawkeye with Kate Bishop, and I absolutely loved it.
Kate Bishop is a strong character.
Yeah. I think that was my problem, is because at the beginning she was a little goofy and cartoony, where this issue, she came off really smart and strong, so.
I also like in this issue what I said in the first issue, well, the problem with this book is she doesn't have a supporting cast. In this book, they gathered her new supporting cast in a room and showed them, which I thought was kind of funny. Okay, so it turns out, the frat boy she thought was cute was behind this all. And these little sticker things that they were finding on people, they allow him to mind control them. But also when people are angry, he can like Hulk up.
He feeds off their hate, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, hate.
Let the hate flow through you.
Let the hate flow through.
If you strike me down, I become more possible than you could possibly imagine.
Something, something, dark side, something, something, complete.
Fear leads to anger, anger leads to hate.
Yeah, he's not the Emperor, though, but he gets a lot bigger and stronger when people are hating. So, Katie's plan is, she's gonna run him away because she found out, okay. So she rescued that girl. The other girl hired her to find her, the girl's girlfriend. Mika's girlfriend. I believe her name is Mika, but I don't remember the girlfriend's name. She runs the tattoo shop under Katie's apartment. So she's mind controlled by him. So she's being a bitch and she's super angry and wants to kill but then the girl kissed her and it cured her. Katie realized she can't just kiss frat boy. That's not going to work. What it is since anger powers him, happiness would fix him. So she has to run him away from the angry people, thinking that'll work, but it didn't quite work.
No.
So she ran him to a drive-in where they were playing The Sound of Music because her reasoning was a bunch of people singing along to a movie about the Nazis being defeated via song would be happy enough to fix him. And it worked. The people singing caused him to hulk down, and then they were able to arrest him. But while she's interrogating him, he fucking exploded.
Oops. But the thing is, he mentioned that he was working for somebody.
Yeah.
And before he exploded, it seemed like he was going to say it was her dad.
He's like, because he knew who she was. Mm-hmm. And then he said, like, well, I'm working for your dad. And then he exploded. Literally exploded, like in green goo. Mm-hmm. So she was a little bothered by that. And she's wondering, because she thought, like, oh, maybe he's talking about my dad. My dad's bad news because he's a criminal guy. And then she goes home, and Jessica Jones is there waiting for her.
Uh-oh.
We don't know why. Jessica cleared her name in her own book, though. So, we're okay.
Yeah, and there was a scene in here where she was having to fight off the giant dude, and Katie was like, where's America when I need her?
Yeah.
Yes, which transitions to our next book, America Issue 1, art by writer Gabby Rivera, art by Joe Quinnos.
This book infuriated me. I'll give you an example. Mike Coughlin, who runs our site, after I wrote this long screed against this book for what it did, said, I saw this and then stopped, and it was from the opening page of the book, which opens, so where does a super strong queer brown girl... I won't go on. This book in the first 12 pages included about 5 references to her lesbian mothers, about 8 references to her being gay. She went to visit her girlfriend who had a fucking rainbow flag outside her house.
Yeah, that's real subtle.
Also discussed her lesbian parents. They kept trying to get over her lesbian parents. This entire book, America Chavez, who is an underdeveloped character, her character trait is she's gay.
I've been telling you that for the longest time, and then when I told you that she was getting her own solo series, I'm like, what are you possibly going to do with her character?
I thought you would develop her character into a 3-dimensional character.
Nope.
No.
Even the college she went to was named after Justice Sotomayor.
Okay, yeah, she ends up, the gimmick was she wants to go to college. Mm-hmm. Like her girlfriend broke up with her because the one thing we got on America is, and we already knew this because she's the fucking leader of the Ultimates now, which has Black Panther and Captain Marvel on the team, and it's ridiculous that she's the leader of the Ultimates, but whatever.
I've been saying that since day one she took over, and it's fucking, only now you're seeing the light.
This just pissed me off. She's very controlling. Her two character traits are she's gay and controlling. Oh, also, she's not white, if you didn't know that, because they made about 8 fucking references to that, too.
There was a and mention where they were fighting book.
It's a visual medium.
There's this image where they're fighting this supervillain, like, oh, you need to fight back with a white light. And there's a second where America Chavez looks at her. And he's like, look, it's just the color of the spectrum. It doesn't mean anything.
And then later on, she's like, I'm going to hit you with the brown fist of justice or something. And it's like, Jesus fucking Christ, Marvel. This is so forced and so awkward. You are never, ever, ever going to have equality in this country as long as being gay is a selling point. This is the equivalent of a pick any random superhero who continually talks about my heterosexual parents, and I really love vagina every other page. That is what this is doing. It's awkward. It's not how people talk. I actually know a lot of gay people. They do not only talk about how they're gay.
You know what the funny part is? If you strip that all away, it's a fairly decent comic.
Yeah, the art was okay.
Yeah, obviously Joe Quinno's from Howard the Duck fame.
Yeah, and I kind of like the gimmick of her like going to this weird other dimensional college. Like, I kind of like that. But the writing was just insufferable.
It was a decent story, and they had to hit you with a 2x4 a couple of times.
Yeah, it's like I know she's gay,
but see that's what was when they first started the Kamala Khan this Marvel series. I was afraid that that's what that was going to be. Whereas everything about her is a one dimensional character, and it has everything to do with her being Muslim.
It wasn't.
Obviously, that's part of her character, but that's not the central focus of her book.
No, they did storylines that involved her Muslim parents, but it only came into effect when she did something that would cause them a problem based on their religion. It was naturally done through the storyline, whereas this, her sexuality, only had bearing on the part with her girlfriend, which was two pages, and the rest of the constant mentions of it had nothing to do with the fucking story. It didn't develop her character. That's the thing that annoyed me most. This is the first issue of a character who, I don't give a shit what Marvel says. This character is not that over. People don't know this character. We don't know that much about this character. And you gave me nothing on this character except her sexuality.
We got nothing of her personality.
Yeah, I mean, the most interesting character in this book was Prodigy. And he's a fucking old character who's been around forever. And he's a side character. It doesn't even matter. Or fucking Kate Bishop was in a couple pages. I like her. From her book, where they give her a personality. You have to develop your characters. You can't make them this one-dimensional.
We just talked about Midnighter and Apollo, and obviously it had elements of that story, but that wasn't the focal point of the book.
Well, no, because it wasn't hitting you over the head that they were gay. It was pushing the fact that they have a relationship, and the relationship is important to those characters. It wasn't the gay relationship is important to those characters. They didn't constantly tell you that. And the thing is, I didn't notice it in that book. Like, I know that they're gay, and I know that they're dating. I understand that. But I also understand who Apollo and Midnighter are as a character.
They're fleshed out three-dimensional characters, and America came off as a cardboard cutout stereotype.
And it makes me think there's nothing more to the character, because that's what you focused on.
Well, that's what I've been saying since day one, when they announced the series.
Well, it's just... Yeah, I guarantee Ewing's going to do a better job of her in Ultimates.
Probably.
Because I don't know that... I'm not impressed with this writer after one issue.
Yeah.
There were some funny jokes in this.
I'm gonna make a case for this. Let's read one more issue. If it's more of this, then I'm fine dropping it. But let's... Maybe they had to just establish everything as far as her character is going forward. If we get more of the same, I'm content dropping it. Let's give it one more issue.
I'll read one more issue. If they do not give her a personality, I am not reading this book again. If they want to keep up her talking about how she's gay every page, but she has a personality, I will continue to read it.
And her dead gay parents.
Yeah, and her dead gay moms. I love my dead gay mom. My wife just watched Heathers for the first time. She was amazed. That is the greatest line. I love my dead gay son. That fucking movie is great.
A book that I feel very similar, obviously not as over the top, but especially when we're talking about the gender. Unstoppable Wasp, issue 3, writer Jeremy Whitley, art by Elsa Carrier. Obviously, this isn't as bad.
No, but this is more of a straight, like, comedy book.
But when you still mention all the stuff with, oh, the girls, and it's like, okay, like, can we please move on?
I kind of turned the corner on Wasp on this issue, though. I mean, she is very much Squirrel Girl.
She's like, yeah, in the sense that she's a little bit smarter.
Yeah, like, she's a genius, but she's kind of
goofy,
weird, but she's so peppy and upbeat about everything that it's kind of...
It turns you off a little bit because it's just so over the top?
No, I was going to say I like it because, I mean, her character, it makes sense why she'd be that way because she's not stuck in the fucking Red Room anymore. Although, in this issue, the big thing was she met up with the last of the girl scientists she was looking for. And that girl won't go with her because, like, she found a girl who's, like, a genius in genetics or something, but she wants to be a popular girl.
She's all, I've seen how what it does to my brother, and he clearly doesn't look happy, so I don't want that life. He's like, I'm really smart, but I don't want that to be my life.
Yeah, well, she wouldn't even come out and say she's really smart. Like, she said, I'm okay at this genetic stuff, and she's like, no, you're not okay, you're amazing at it. And she's like, yeah, I don't want any part of this. And she's like, you gotta understand, like, my parents are immigrants, and if they find out I'm good at something, they're going to nonstop push me at it, because they think then I will be successful, and that's all they care about. So, you know, the thing is, Wasp can't relate to any of this, because she's not like most girls. Who only take what they've been given, like a pretty little princess.
You know I won't. He's a force referring to the WWE superstar Nia Jax.
She's shit.
But she's the Rock cousin, so she'll be given opportunity after opportunity.
Oh, did you hear the rumor on why she lost last night?
No, I want to hear this now.
Because the Rock, when he came out for that thing, he called CM Punk.
Oh, that's his receipt.
And they were so mad that they punished Nia Jax. Which, you know, not her inability to wrestle. No, Rock's phone call. I don't think that's true, but I thought it was funny. Okay, so Wasp kind of finished up with Moon Girl. Moon Girl also didn't join her group because she's too busy.
I will say this. When they put over the fact that Moon Girl was the smartest girl in the world, and that was her gimmick going forward, and they were really pushing that character, trying to get her over, I'm like, this is sort of go-away heat. I hate to admit it, but she's slowly but surely winning me over.
Yeah, I wonder how her book is.
I kind of want to read it, because I... Like, maybe if there's...
You know what I liked about her?
What?
She didn't come off as overly wacky. Yeah. And that's given that she's like an 8-year-old girl and has a fucking pet dinosaur.
Well, because when I first saw that, I'm just like, okay, Marvel's check. She felt like a check on the list. It's like, okay, we need a book that appeals to little girls, and we'd like it if she was African American. And I read it at first, and it was kind of a cute series because they paired it up with Will Devil Dinosaur. But at the same time, I was just like, well, this doesn't seem like it has legs, and maybe they'll continue to subsidize it. But when they established her as the smartest person in the world, that gave it
something.
That gave it a gimmick, and I kind of like it now. And it's like, I'm hoping there's a jumping on point for that series, because now going forward, I'm interested in her. This character got Moon Girl over more than it did Wasp for me.
Yeah, but like I said, I kind of like Wasp.
Even
spoilers.
Wasp, I like Wasp's her organization name is Geniuses in Action Research Labs. Girl for sure.
Yeah, girl. She was so proud of that. I also like that she failed to recruit a good number of these girls. Mm. And I'm glad Moon Girl isn't joining her, because had she, then I think it would have kind of detracted, because this is, you know, Wasp's book. It's not Moon Girl's book. But she recruited one girl who, that was really cute, actually. She has Jarvis drive her to go, and Jarvis is not cool with driving this wacky ass little girl around. by the way. He finds it ridiculous that he has to do this. Jarvis has become like a bitter old man, and it's kind of awesome. But she goes to see this first girl, and immediately the girl gets knocked out of her fucking window by like green energy, and Wasp has to save her, and it turns out she was trying to build a teleporter because her parents are divorced, but her mom got this really good job offer somewhere across the country, but the dad couldn't leave his job, so she never gets to see her mom. So she tried to build a teleporter because then she could go see her mom whenever she wants. She apparently does stuff like this a lot, so when the dad comes home, the dad is fucking stoked about this because he's like, wait a minute, you're saying you'll fund all this and she'll get a lab and she won't have to destroy my place anymore? That's great! And she'll be around people her own age because she's not very popular at school.
And she had one friend, and let me tell you, yeah. Dumb as rocks.
Yeah. That was really fun. And then, so she recruited her, but she couldn't recruit the Indian girl who wants to be popular. She couldn't recruit Moon Girl because she's too busy being the smartest girl in the room. Irony. And, then this girl she knows comes from the Red Room. And she's like, okay, well, they sent me here, to bring you back. And she's like, oh, but you don't have to go. And she's like, no, you don't understand. If I don't bring you back, they're going to kill me. And it's like, that's not good. That's a little more serious. A
little bit.
Yeah. But, oh, we also had an appearance by OG Wasp in this issue, who called to yell at her for missing her appointment with Matt Murdock. Because remember, she doesn't have a social security number. She is not a citizen of the United States.
He's like, you were supposed to meet up with Matt Murdock about getting your green card. She's like, oh, but I got really busy with all this science stuff, and I just lost track of time. And then Janet is quick to bring up. It's like, yeah, that's you're definitely Pim's daughter, all right.
Yeah, and she got, like, she said something to her, and Jarvis is like, oh, you really shouldn't have said that. Because she, like, kind of went off on her. Oh, you're just like your dad, blah, blah, blah. He was never on time either. And then she hands Jarvis the phone. She's like, she wants to talk to you. And she yelled at Jarvis and apparently said some very threatening things. And Jarvis is like, yeah, we're definitely going to meet with the lawyer tomorrow. And she's like, why? What'd she say? And he's like, I'm not comfortable saying that to a girl your age. So I hope Jarvis sticks around in this book because I like the dynamic.
He's the straight man to Wasp hijinks.
Yeah, yeah, and it's really funny. So I want that to stay, and I want to see where the storyline goes with the girl from the Red Room.
I will say this, my nitpick of the series continues because they mention Neil deGrasse Tyson, who in real life is in fact a very smart man. But when you're dealing with people like Reed Richards who can make time machines and teleporters, it's like really.
Well, they're trying to. That's fine when you relate something to the real world.
It's like, is Neil deGrasse Tyson really all that smart when you have Reed Richards in the same universe?
Well, maybe in the Marvel universe, since everybody else is smarter, he is smarter also. So that he can still be really smart, even though. I don't know.
That's the one thing. It's not a legitimate problem with the book. It's just I mentioned earlier. It's just nitpicking. It's like,
yeah, it's fine.
It's they try to interject real science and all this wacky comic book quote unquote science.
Yeah, and there was one thing where they'll do like these little like Wasp gives science facts, like actual science facts. One of them, it was seriously like five fucking bubbles long. It kept going. And I'm like, I'm not interested in this.
She's like, oh, the amount of power that it takes
to yeah, it was that.
Energize Times Square for 1 hour could light up 15 homes for a year.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, that's kind of interesting. But you actually explained the science behind like what a kilowatt is and shit. And it's like, okay, I understand why you're doing this, but this isn't really interesting to read. Like, couldn't you just give me the fact about the 15 homes instead of doing the other three fucking bubbles where you explain. Oh, God.
This is the same book that had Janet Van Dyne shrink down, had to fight a giant raccoon.
Yes, there was a giant raccoon, and Moon Girl got Devil Dinosaur to fight it, but they shrunk the raccoon down, and then the raccoon was riding on Devil Dinosaur's back, which is pretty funny.
It was
a funny book, and I don't read Squirrel Girl, so I can keep reading this.
This series is slowly but surely winning me over.
Yeah, it is. It's not doing the serious stuff yet that I was hoping it would, but I mean, I kind of like her. I appreciate her, enthusiasm.
You mentioned that earlier, and I kind of want an issue that focuses on it. Obviously, I mentioned earlier this book is pretty much the Unbreakable. Was it Kimmy Schmidt? And it's like, okay, that's cute. And then you obviously have the science element to it as well. And to me, that's enough of a premise for a book. But with that said, I would like an issue where I understand the idea is that she doesn't want to let all the Red Room stuff weigh her down. But at the same time, she's got to confront it. Like, that's not normal. And then when she mentioned that she needed to get a green card because she can't go back, it's like, well, that's kind of a big deal. In this goofy, kind of wacky, over-the-top book, which you mentioned comparisons to Squirrel Girl, and I see the comparisons there. Can we at least have one issue that's sort of serious to kind of differentiate that from Squirrel Girl? Because I would like her to be a three-dimensional character, because at this point, it kind of seems like she's overcompensating. And there is a really good premise, the idea she's trying to recruit all these smart women. But at the same time, it's like, okay, you kind of need to deal with all the stuff that happened at the Red Room, too. All right, let's move on to Clone Conspiracy Omega Issue 1. I'll get the creative on that as... Oh, okay, here's the... It has several creative attached to it. The opening, I think, involved... I'll get the creative as we start doing the book.
Dan Slott wrote some stuff. This is actually some pretty good stories thrown in here. The first one, it wasn't really the biggest one because it doesn't lead to a whole lot, but, there was one thing that built from it. Spider-Man's dealing with fallout from all the clones and, like, people are coming to him and they're pissed off because Peter Parker told them their families would be safe or whatever, but, like, the clones are, like, melting in front of the families, and that's bad. So they're all angry at him, and he's Spider-Man, but Spider-Man is Peter Parker. They don't know that, but he knows. So he's really like down about this, and he feels responsible. Mm-hmm. So
the first story dealing with all the fallout with the clones was Collateral Damage by Dan Slott and Crystal Gage.
Okay, so Rhino's chilling there, because Rhino, they brought back his wife. Mm. And, like, S.H.I.E.L.D. shows up, and they're like, we're going to handle things here, blah, 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 and they were going to arrest Rhino. But Rhino was just, like, fucking sitting on the sidewalk looking depressed. And he's like, well, you don't have to arrest him. He's not doing anything. Let me talk to him. Which, of course, causes Rhino to go ape shit.
It's like, how am I supposed to carry on without my wife again?
Yeah, he's like, I already lost her once. They brought her back, and now she's dead again. What the fuck is the point? So he's all angry, but Spider-Man talks him down, and then I guess they arrested him. So he went away. But there's another part to this comic, because the Lizard also escaped with his clone family, who were dying. By the way, I want to again remind you, Lizard ate his son. He fucking ate him.
Oh, and that's the thing. They start to mention it. Lizard starts going on, and he's like, oh, Dr. Octopus couldn't do it, and Ben Reilly couldn't do it, but Miles Warren couldn't do it. He's like, I'm such a genius. I found a way to stop my family from breaking down molecularly. Yeah.
He turned his clone family. He gave them the Lizard serum. So now it's the Lizard, his Lizard son, and his Lizard wife. And it was a hilarious image. because they were like in the sewers. They had like a little apartment set up, but they turned into lizards. So it's like the mom is like pouring milk, but she's the lizard mom. So she's not hitting the cup and the kid can't pick up his fucking plate to eat the sandwich he's got on it off it. And they're just monster people. And then Kane is pissed off because Peter didn't look for Ben Reilly. And he's like, well, he's dead. I saw his clothes in a pile of dust. And Kane's like, you're a fucking idiot. He's not dead.
I even brought this up too on our Twitter, at a comic podcast. I tweeted the writer to it. I'm like, when's Peter going to learn? And then Chris don't fire back. He's like, look, he's been through a lot of stuff. He can't even write now. I'm like, oh, because that worked out so well before in the past with Peter. And then he fires back, oh, too soon.
Nice. Well, anyway, he's pissed off about that. And he says he's going to go find Ben Reilly. That's Kane's new job. He's going to find Ben Reilly. Ben Reilly met up with one of his scientists.
Oh, that is the second story by Peter David.
Yeah, and Peter David is writing the Scarlet Spider book.
Mm.
So.
And Mark Bailey did the art on this one.
Yeah. Well, this was the setup for the series.
Mm.
Because Peter's going to go off and Ben's gonna go off and do stuff, I guess.
Well, speaking of Peter, you casually mentioned it. The last story here, King's Favor, written by only Dan Slott and pencils by Stuart Immonen.
Oh yeah, this led to a upcoming story too. So, Kingpin called, Parker, or called Spider-Man, cause he owed Spider-Man a favor. And Spider-Man's all pissed off because Kingpin, he's a bad guy. He's like, oh, well, I got your favor for you now. And Spider-Man, like, flips his table over with all his many cupcakes that he had because Kingpin's fat. And he's like, well, I got something for you. It's the location of your greatest enemy. And Spider-Man didn't want it until he said it was Osborn. And then he's like, oh, okay, I want that. So, and, you know, the next storyline is Osborn's around.
I don't know if it's going to be a storyline or it's all going to be self-contained to one issue. Because when we
I don't really think you bring Norman Osborn back for one issue.
That's what I wonder, too, but it's also a super giant annual, like, 50-page. So, I wonder if they're going to deal with... Resolve it all on the 40 pages of that.
Oh, Osborn's like an international arms dealer now, so apparently he'll have to chase him around a lot. But yeah, this is a lot better than I expected it to be. I mean, it was three stories, and I liked all three stories. And yep. Two of them, or all three of them, set something up for something.
Yeah, you had a bunch of creatives, but at the same time, it's like they told different various parts of the fall of Clone Conspiracy. But at the same time, they managed to set up all the stuff going forward with all the various Spider books.
Spider-Man was a dick to Spider-Gwen, by the way.
Oh, yeah, and Kane had to sort of talk her down. He's like, oh, he's just been through a lot. You know, he's like, I knew the real Gwen, and she'd be proud of you, too. But I read that and I thought, is this the same Gwen that had an affair with Norman Osborn?
The real Gwen?
Uh-huh.
Yes. Yes.
So maybe not comparing yourself to 616 Gwen is the best.
Do you think in Renew Your Vows, Normie is Gwen Stacy's son?
I'll bring that up to Ryan Stegman, who I also talked to on Twitter, who was also equally hilarious. Remember I said, oh, little Normie's our new favorite character. He's like, oh, you blew it. That was like, that was my opportunity to secretly pitch Marvel a little Normie series.
Oh, that'd be so awesome. They could cross him over with the X-Babies. He could destroy those evil X-Babies once and for all. That'd be great.
We got ideas, Marvel. We're not hard to find.
Hire us.
Well,
I work cheap.
Yeah. We'll accept interviews as payment. No, we'll accept cash as payment, right?
Yeah, by the way, I'm not getting my tax return.
Wait, what?
Student loans, brother.
Oh,
apparently when I handled all my student loans, one of them didn't get the notice that I moved, so they've been sending me letters and I was unaware of it. And the IRS website, when they said, you owe money to the state of Illinois, and the state of Illinois told me I owed them $25. They lied. I actually owed a lot of money to someone else, and they took my entire return.
Oops.
I was pretty bummed.
I'd be pretty pissed, but.
Yeah, it sucks, but, you know, what are you going to do? It's fine. I at least I know I have a debt now.
And more so to the point, you knew that the money had just wasn't floating around in limbo?
Yeah, I know it went somewhere. So that's, I mean, I guess, yeah, that's good. I'd rather have the money to, you know, do stuff with, but that's okay. Whatever.
Moon Knight issue 12. Or
taxation is theft.
That brings us back full circle when we talk to all the Ron Swanson stuff.
Yeah. He knows.
Moon Knight issue 12 writer Jeff Lemire, art by Greg Smallwood.
Mark Spector teamed up with Stephen Grant, and Moon Knight.
All of his other personalities that we thought had since recently gone away.
Who he killed. Yeah, he teamed up with all of them to rescue Anubis's girlfriend, wife, whatever, so that he could get, Crowley's soul back. There's a lot of fighting in this issue, and it was wacky because there were the, you know, the other personalities of Moon Knight, and they told him, Mark, you are the only one who can go forward, but you can call on us anytime you need us. Which, I don't, he's clearly still crazy. I still don't know where they're going with this.
Neither do I. I thought we were leading to a conclusion, but when we saw the personality come back, I'm like, okay, all those issues that you dealt with him with all his personalities, you sort of just flushed
out. Yeah, but then they left again.
Yeah, that's weird. And they sort of mentioned, oh, we'll be back when it's necessary.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to keep reading it because I got to see how this ends. But I'm becoming worried it's never going to end.
No.
This is just the book.
Since we're talking Moon Knight, and we're recording this on a Monday, as we often do, our friend Carl Stern at whenitwascool.com is trying to get over this idea of Monday being Moon Knight Mondays. But there's a reason why I bring it up, because I actually thought of an idea for a Moon Knight TV series. And the idea would be every single episode of the series is a different personality of Moon Knight.
Well, he's only got, well, I mean, in this book, what they did, he's got like 50, but he only has three main ones.
I'm saying that would actually be it'd be obviously gimmicky, but I still think it has legs.
Why didn't the Netflix shows do Moon Knight instead of Iron Fist?
You mean why did they, oh yeah, I don't know.
Moon Knight's cooler.
And here's the thing, if you want to get over Iron Fist, you know what you do? That's a sort of a genre they haven't done with the superhero thing. Do a buddy picture.
With him and Luke Cage?
Yeah, I prefer
that.
But
they already did a Luke Cage show, though.
But I'm saying, you know, in hindsight, that's what they should have done.
Whatever. I don't know. I still haven't watched the Luke Cage show.
No, and I'm not in a rush either. It's like, I'm not a big fan of either character, but them together is kind of fun. And that should have been the series.
What's the next book?
That's going to do it for this week's books, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
17 books.
All right.
All right, let's move on to our final segment, next week's books. Yeah!
He does this, he does that. He's as big as a cat and he'll hit you with his bat.
I was wrong. I was wrong about you, Sting.
Thank you, AJ Styles. Apparently when you're from Georgia, you can't pronounce the letter G.
No, so you say stink and ronk.
And corja.
I was wrong. I was wrong about you, Sting.
Wait, he said it right the second time. AJ. Okay. Next week's books.
Comiclist.com.
First we have Uber Invasion, number 4.
Oh, that should be a fun book.
Then we have Something I Want to Try from Boom Studios, Kent. New York Times best-selling writer Matt Kent.
Oh, geez, here we go.
Grass Kings, number 1.
Oh, okay.
A mystery series chronicling the tragic lives of the Grass Kings, three brothers and rulers of a trailer park kingdom.
Does it involve weed?
I don't know if it's that kind of grass. But maybe, I don't know, it sounds different, I want to read it.
Okay. What publisher is this? Boom Studios, okay.
Yeah. Action Comics, 975.
Woo, that was quick.
Yeah, I'm good, because I want to know the storyline. Astro City 42, super hyped, Origin of the Gentleman. Gentleman is a great character. Flash, number 18. Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, 60. Actually, I don't want to read this.
Oh, why?
I didn't like the last, oh wait, no, we have to read it because Guy Gardner.
Yeah, my boy!
Okay. So yeah, we'll read that. Justice League of America, number 2.
For those of you who are wondering why I called him my boy, we have Comic Book Boy Stables now going forward if you missed that episode of Comic Conversations.
Titans, number 9. Wonder Woman, 18. Wonder Woman,
she's
hard word is waiting for you.
You're kind of derpy and in jail.
And the power you possess, hit him with a bat, you're as quick as a cat. Yeah.
And you're ronk.
And you're ronk. Stink was ronk. All New Wolverine, number 18. Inhumans vs. X-Men, 6 of 6. The end. Well, until Inhumans vs. X-Men Omega.
I'm sorry, they stopped the Alpha thing, but they're continuing the Omega gimmick?
Yeah, weirdly. Jessica Jones, number 6.
Jessica Jones! I don't know.
You're kind of frumpy and...
You like it in the butt.
Kingpin, number 2.
Ooh, I quite like that book. It's quite excellent.
Despite being written by R.L. Stein, I do not want to read Man-Thing.
Here's my review of the Man-Thing book, I have to imagine.
What's quite excellent?
Thank do you want to read it then?
What's that?
Do you want to read it then?
I kind of do. Well, let's put it on the maybe pile and see how many books we have.
Okay, well no, that means I'll let you read it and then you tell me if it's good or not.
Okay.
Nova, number 4.
That means no-go in Spanish.
Old Man Logan, 19.
I'm shocked you wanted to read it, considering you crapped on Old Man Logan off-air.
I know. Well, you want to not read it?
No, I want to read it because I like the art and I like the direction going forward.
Okay. Silver Surfer, number 9.
Do you want to read Silver Surfer?
Yeah.
Okay. Shut up.
I like Silver Surfer. It feels like it's been a long time since we had a Valiant book. There's no Valiant next week.
Is that it, then?
Yeah, that's it.
Let's add
Man-Thing. That's a lot of books.
Let me see. I'm leaving off Man-Thing. That leaves us at 16 books. You want to just add Man-Thing?
Oh, yeah, let's read Man-Thing. But... you have to announce it as giant-sized Man-Thing.
I'm not getting the reference.
the original Man-Thing solo book was called Giant-Sized Man-Thing.
Ah, there's your
because
comic book
they
history
had,
lesson of the
day. Yeah, they had comics that were called Giant-Sized, and they apparently didn't realize that Giant-Sized Man-Thing makes you think of big penis.
Also, the idea is like, is he the Giant-Sized Man-Thing?
Is he the Giant-Sized Man-Thing, or does he have a Giant-Sized Man-Thing?
He's a Giant-Sized Man.
Come on, Man-Thing. Like, I don't know what the back of your head looks like.
I have to tweet that to Steve Orlando and be like, TMI, Steve Orlando's TMI.
I didn't want to know who was on top.
Well, now you do. You can never get that image out of your head.
I still like to think it's Midnighter. I don't know. I'm not really that, the gay friends I've had, I've never really discussed sex with them because, you know, I'm cool with them as people, but I don't want to think about gay sex because it's kind of icky to me. No offense, gay people.
I'll try to be the PC person here, which if you talk to us off air, it rarely happens, but I'm sure they think the same thing of heterosexual sex.
Probably. You put what in what?
It's so icky.
That's gross.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's show. So from all of us at halfguard.com, thanks for checking out this week's show. And as always, check you guys out next week. Adios.
You are going to love this.
Yeah.
Wow, man, freaked out. Dang.
If I can be serious for a minute.
I cannot wait to hear the finished product.
Without being interrupted.
Of a man called Sting, performed by Lance Storm.
He's a man called Sting. He's a man called Sting. He's a man called Sting. The man called Sting.
Do you know what I actually said to my wife when she said she didn't make the meatloaf?
No.
I said, oh, it's okay, honey. I'll just eat some chicken nuggets. My wife didn't cook for me, and I reverted to a 4-year-old. I'm just going to eat chicken nuggets.